Chapter 68, United States of America v. Ross William Ulbricht. All rise, the clerk bellowed. This court is now in session. The Honorable Judge Catherine Forrest presiding. Ross placed his hands on the oak table in front of him as he pushed himself upward. His legal team and two U.S. Marshals rose beside and behind him in unison. He looked at the judge, an attenuated, stoic woman, a few court cases away from turning 50. In front of Ross, a group of lawyers from the U.S. Attorney's Office stood and greeted the judge with the appropriate, Your Honor, as the court proceedings were set in motion. Judge Forrest was terse and to the point, cognizant of the fact that time in room 15A of the Lower Manhattan United States Courthouse was other people's money, tax dollars at work. She announced dates for jury selection and scheduling and noted that expert witnesses would be approved, travel plans agreed upon, and some of the agents involved in the case against Ross, including Jared, Gary, and Tom, called to testify. Judge Forrest had a tough reputation for handing out harsh sentences for drug offenders. But Ross's legal team, headed by Joshua Dratel, stood ready for a fight. It had been months since Ross had arrived at the prison in Brooklyn. But as autumn had become winter, and the leaves fell off the trees, Ross was transferred across the bridge to the Metropolitan Correctional Center in Manhattan, which would serve as his new home during the trial. MCC Prison, as it is called, was a chilling tower of concrete and steel that stood just a few blocks away from the World Trade Center, and even closer to the FBI and IRS headquarters. The jail had, over time, had its share of famed residents, including John Gotti, the Gambino crime family boss, and several Al-Qaeda terrorists. When Ross arrived, whispers scurried through the walls that a new prominent resident had joined the ranks. A pirate. While he waited for the trial to commence, life inside MCC became as monotonous as in its Brooklyn counterpart. Ross made friends. He taught yoga classes to some inmates, offered others help with their GEDs, and gave impromptu explanations of physics, philosophy, and libertarian theory to the guards. The trial began shortly after Christmas. Each day unfurled the same way. Ross was awoken in his cell at dawn by the guards. While still in his prison uniform, he was shackled at the ankles and cuffed at the waist and wrists. With U.S. Marshals by his side, inmate 18870-111 trudged slowly through the concrete corridors to the federal courthouse. The door lock would buzz to announce Ross's arrival or departure. He was placed in cages and cells and told to wait until the next cage or cell was ready for him. The days in court oscillated between dull and terrifying. The prosecution presented all of the chat logs and diaries found on Ross's computer. Conversations that orbited around the sale of cocaine and heroin, guns and other illegalities, and the profits DPR was corralling. There were chat logs presented, where Variety Jones had promised to spring DPR from prison if he was ever captured by the Phoebes. Remember that one day when you're in the exercise yard, I'll be the dude in the helicopter coming in low and fast, I promise, the prosecution read aloud. With the amount of dollars we're generating, I could hire a small country to come get you. And then there were the chats about the alleged murders. The prosecution showed spreadsheets illustrating the immense growth of the Silk Road, the hundreds of millions of dollars in sales, and the more than $80 million in profit that allegedly led back to Ross Ulbricht. The jury's eyes seemed to glaze over when the lawyers tried to explain how Bitcoin blockchains worked, why server encryption and CAPTCHAs and IP addresses were so important, and what happens when you run Ubuntu Linux on a Samsung 700Z. Then it was the defense's turn. Dratel eloquently argued that, sure, Ross had been caught with his hands on the keyboard, but he was not the Dread Pirate Roberts. That person, whoever he was, could be dozens of people. Dratel even admitted, to gasps in the courtroom, that Ross had indeed started the Silk Road years earlier, before the Dread Pirate Roberts moniker was even invented, but that the site had soon spiraled out of control, like a digital Frankenstein. Ross had become too stressed running the Silk Road and had given it away. Dratel pointed fingers at other people who worked with bitcoins, noting that they could easily be the Dread Pirate Roberts. He contended that there was very obviously more than one DPR, and Ross was not among them. Ross's defense showed emails between Jared and other agents who had all believed, at one time or another, long before they captured Ross Ulbricht, that DPR was someone else. Dratel then argued that Ross had been framed by the real DPR. The back of the courtroom overflowed daily during the proceedings. The benches on the right of the room were jammed with reporters and bloggers covering the spectacle. The ones to the left had a different, more somber feeling and were allocated to Ross Ulbricht's loved ones and supporters. Advocates came in from all over the country to champion Ross, protesting on the steps of the courthouse that he was a hero, that all he did was run a website, and if that was a crime, then the CEOs of eBay and Craigslist should stand trial too, as illegal goods were sold on those sites. Ross's mother, Lynn, arrived every day, bundled up in her thick black jacket, with a dainty dark scarf and a wounded look on her face, as if what was happening wasn't real. She could never in her worst nightmares have imagined that this fate would befall her son. Young Ross, her baby boy, who was so kind and thoughtful and sweet and smart, who'd gone off to graduate school to become a molecular physicist, now sat 10 feet away, facing a sentence worse than death. But when Ross looked back at her, he offered up a confident and unfazed stare that told her not to worry, that he was fine. The defense knew an insurmountable quantum of evidence pointed directly to Ross. The fake IDs, Ross's old friend Richard Bates from Austin testifying against him, the tens of millions of dollars found on Ross's laptop, and Jared testifying that he had worked for Ross as an undercover employee. People in the courtroom could see that in the case of United States of America v. Ross William Ulbricht, one side was clearly winning. After 3 weeks of trial, the closing arguments were presented. His conduct was brazenly illegal. He knew perfectly well what he was doing the whole time, Saren Turner, the prosecutor, bellowed as he paced in front of the jury. He built it. He grew it. He operated it from top to bottom until the very end. As he spoke, Saren grew more exasperated by the defense Ross had given. He thinks he can pull one over on you, Saren thundered to the jury. Objection, Ross's lawyer tried to interject. And then there is the defendant's attempt to explain away mountains of evidence on his computer, Saren continued, ignoring the defense lawyer. It's a hacker. Objection! It's a virus, Saren ridiculed. It's ludicrous. There were no little elves that put all of that evidence on the defendant's computer. He finally concluded, peering at the men and women of the jury. He knew perfectly well what he was doing the whole time, and you should find him guilty on all counts. When it was the defense's turn, Dratel stood up, vexed by Saren's speech. One of the fundamental principles in this case is that DPR and Mr. Ulbricht cannot be the same person, Dratel began. Saving those chats, does that sound like DPR? You have to actually enable the chats to be saved. He went on, noting that the Dread Pirate Roberts would never have made such a silly mistake. Keeping a journal like that and then saving it on your laptop? A little too convenient. He pointed to the evidence found on the laptop and said it had been put there by someone else. It was the real Dread Pirate Roberts, who knew the feds were closing in. And while Ross was in the library downloading a TV show onto his laptop, the real DPR placed the chat logs and other evidence on his computer. There are a lot of blinking neon signs in this case that have been created to incriminate Mr. Ulbricht, he shrieked. It is not the same person. Dratel argued skillfully that in November 2011, Ross had given the site away, a site that he, regretfully, had started. That Ross had then left for Australia to start his life anew and get away from the monster he had birthed. The internet is not what it seems. You can create an entire fiction. Finally, Dratel asserted that the government in no way had proved beyond a reasonable doubt that Ross Ulbricht was the Dread Pirate Roberts. I'm confident, in deliberations, you will reach only one conclusion. Ross Ulbricht is not guilty on every count in the indictment.